So last week we had done half of verse number 4, where this verse is very, very important because it covers the entire essence of spiritual sadhana or the spiritual pursuit. Everything is covered in this verse. If you understand this verse, you really don't need to study or read anything else. So we can end the class after this. First line is very important, but we'll just summarize it. Vedanta vijnana sunishchitartha sanyasa yogat yataya shuddha sattvaha te brahma lokeshu parant kale paramritat parimuchyanti sarve. There is a second line which comes in a different Upanishad, a second verse which they don't have it here, which we also chant. So the first line we had done last week in detail, but I'll just summarize it. Vedanta Vijnana. Vedanta means the end of the Vedas. The Vedas are our spiritual books, and the end or the highest knowledge is in the Upanishad. So that's why the Upanishad is called Vedanta. And there are 108 Upanishads that we know of. There might have been more. And these Upanishads were not the work of one teacher, but over several thousand years, different teachers had taught their students this knowledge, and it was memorized initially and then subsequently written down in the Upanishads. So Vedanta is the Upanishad, is the highest knowledge. Vijnana means, jnana means knowledge. Vijnana means application of knowledge. So not only having knowledge, but having understood the knowledge, applied it in his life through study of the scriptures. So nishchitartha, and his knowledge is completely clear. There are no doubts. He has no doubt about this knowledge. So such a student who has this knowledge, doubtless, completely clear. Like there was one student and his teacher used to say his knowledge is like a fruit in his hand. That's why he called him hastamalaka, means one who has a fruit in his hand. If you have a fruit in your hand, say you have an apple or a pear, do you have any doubt? That clear it is, right? If I have an apple in my hand, do I say, oh, is it an apple or a pear or is it a fruit or a vegetable? No, I know it is an apple. So to that student, the knowledge should be that clear, just as an apple in the hand. So such a student, sannyasa yogat. What he does is, sannyas means such a student detaches from the world of OET and attaches. Yoga means attach. Sannyas means detach, detaching from the world, attaching to the higher. Yataya, such a person exerts, puts effort. This knowledge does not come easily. People say, you know, I have been studying this for 2-3 years or 5 years. I have been coming to these classes for, you know, so many months. I don't see any benefit. It takes years of effort. I myself have been listening to all these teachers since around 1990. Before that, very minimal, but after 1990 on a regular basis, 25 years, you know, I have been listening. And still, you know, there is a lot more that we all can learn. So one has to be patient and one has to be determined. Shuddha sattva means a person with a pure mind. So a person with a pure mind who has the right knowledge, puts in the effort, detaches, gets dispassion from the world, holds on to the Lord. Such a person, what happens to that person? What happens to such an individual? So does he realize or does he get liberated? Mukti means liberation. So there are two kinds of individuals, but I'll just summarize this verse. Te brahma lokeshu. These people who have studied the knowledge, put in the effort, in the world of Brahma, in the world of Brahma, Parantakale means at the time of death. Paramritat, from immortality, parimuchyanti sarve. They become totally liberated. So such individuals who have the knowledge, who have put the effort, get freed from this world of ignorance and become one with the Lord. That is called liberation, parimuchyanti. They become completely free, completely liberated. Now, what kind of liberation is there? What do we mean by liberation? Because that is all what we are seeking for. I am suffering in this world. I just want to be free. Nobody said, I want to keep on suffering. No, they say, I want freedom from suffering. I have had enough of this. I don't want this anymore. And then we look for freedom by changing our address. You know, I'm tired of the heat of Bakersfield, so let me move to San Luis Obispo. I'm tired of this husband, so let me get another husband. I'm tired of this job, let me get another job. So what we do is we change our location, we change our surroundings, we change the people we have, or we change our appearance, go get plastic surgery, you know, so that maybe that way I'll get happiness, maybe I'll find, you know, somebody. So they say that a truly liberated person is, there are two kinds of liberation. One is called Jivan Mukti and one is called Krama Mukti. So we'll spend some time talking about this. What is liberation? What is freedom? What is total, complete joy? Which the study of this Upanishad will take us in that direction. If we truly study this Upanishad, apply that, it will take us. So there are two kinds of. One is Jivan Mukti, means while living, this person becomes a realized master, becomes one with the truth. And examples of that are Jesus, Buddha, Shankaracharya, Swami Chinmayananda, the founder of our mission, Mirabai. You know, these are great saints and sages or prophets who, while living in this life itself, were liberated. They became one with the truth. They became one with the Lord in heaven. In their mind, there was no difference. There was complete elimination of ego, and they became one with the truth. What is ego? And that is, ego is always the question people ask. And even psychiatrists have spent a lot of time studying the ego. They say ego is I and mine. As long as I have this idea, I and mine, I'm still in the ego. My house, my husband, my child, I am a man, I am a woman, I am a American or an Indian, or I am a black or a white, or I am short or tall, or I am young or old. It does not mean that you don't have, or as long as I have identification, I am so and so, this is my house, this is my name, this is my... So you mean to say that such a person does not know who he is or where he is? If you ask him, you know, so they say, well, total elimination of ego is total elimination of name, form. Because we even have this idea, I am this particular form, I am male or female, I am short or tall, I am young or old. So all these concepts are concepts of the ego. Anything that you can describe or you can... So such a person goes beyond all names, all forms, all appearances, all descriptions. So what do we mean by that? He understands that that alone, the Brahman, the consciousness, the total substratum of this universe, which is the support of the entire universe, alone exists. Everything else that we see in this world is an appearance upon that Brahman. So the consciousness which we call as Om, or we call as Brahman, or which Christ called as Father in heaven, it is formless, it is shapeless, it has no color, it has no appearance, it is the support of the universe. And the whole universe, all the stars, all the, even the planets, even the most distant planets, even heaven and hell, appear on that one consciousness, stay for a while and disappear. Just as ocean is one, it's huge. The Pacific Ocean. In the Pacific Ocean, you have waves, you have, you know, bubbles, you have froth, you have, you know, whirlpools, you have, you know, hurricanes. All the things that arise in the wave, in the ocean, whether it's waves or bubbles or hurricanes or whatever, anything that arises, whirlpools, stay in that ocean for a while and disappear. They don't stay forever. But the ocean is permanent. So similarly, that Brahman, that support of the whole universe is permanent, on whom all of us have appeared. Just as a bubble may think it is a bubble, or a wave may think it is a wave, but really he knows, the bubble knows, or the wave should know, that I am the ocean taking the form of a wave. If the wave thinks I am a wave, then the wave will appear and disappear, and the wave will say, oh, I was there and then I died. But if the wave says, I am water, I am the ocean, then in me arise all the waves. Even while he is a wave, if he understands that I am the ocean and in me arise all the waves, then the wave goes beyond death, right? Otherwise, the wave will say, okay, I appeared, I stayed for a while and died. But if the wave says, I am the ocean, and this ocean took the form of this wave temporarily, then there is no death. So similarly, you and I have to say that I am that consciousness who at this moment is appearing as this body. As this body, which I am calling Anil or Diana or Bill or whatever name I am giving, whatever form I am giving. But they are all nothing but waves upon that ocean. They are all nothing but appearances upon that consciousness. And this topic will come again and again. And people say, I have already heard it. And I'll have an answer for that for you in the future. And say, oh, I have heard this many times. Don't keep repeating it. But this whole book will keep on repeating it. And why do they keep on repeating? We'll talk about that some other time. So this person has understood that I am that consciousness and this body is only a temporary appearance. And so when this body perishes, a person is not perturbed because he says, I am that consciousness. My body may perish, but it doesn't affect me because I never was born, I never died. Just as a wave, if he says I am a wave, he will be miserable. But if he says I am the ocean and the wave appears and disappears, the wave says I am fine. Because I am the ocean. So this wise person understands that I am that Brahman. I am that consciousness, and the knowledge is immediate. It is immediate knowledge. Once you have heard that, and how do you hear it? You are taught by a guru. You are taught by a guru. You need a teacher. That's why we have Swami Chinmayananda, who has written the commentary and whose commentary we read. So you need a guru to interpret these Upanishads. It's hard to understand on your own because they are in Sanskrit. The language is very subtle. It is very suggestive. So little more about ego and about death of ego I have covered in this red, where it says, Einstein said this very beautifully, ego equals 1 upon knowledge. So what does that mean? The more the knowledge, the less the ego. The less the knowledge, the more the ego. That's what we find, that a person who has truly grasped this knowledge becomes more humble. If this knowledge makes you arrogant, that I know so much and I am so much smarter than everybody else, or people who go to church, they have this holier than thou attitude, you know, I go to church and this person never goes to church, so I am somehow superior. So that is called ego. So the more knowledge you have, it should make you humble. If you go to church, that should make you more humble. Oh, I am so grateful that I have an opportunity to sit in front of Christ and or sit in front of the pastor and learn. So the more the knowledge, the less the ego. The less the knowledge, the more the ego. Then a student went to a teacher and says, I want happiness. You know, people go to the teacher and they ask for different things. They want knowledge. They want, you know, so some people say, you know, my son, teenage son is giving me problems. Oh, guru, tell me what to do. You know, all those kind of problems. They go to, or I am having problems with my wife, my husband, my business. And they go to spiritual teachers to ask these questions. If you talk to Swamiji, he will tell you. Anyway, so one student went to the teacher and says, I want happiness. So teacher said, it is very simple. Said, simple? Yeah. Why is it so simple? He says, what is I? I is ego, right? I am somebody special. So eliminate I, eliminate ego. And what is want? Want is desire, right? So eliminate ego and eliminate desire, and what is left?
Happiness.
So if you want happiness, it's very simple. Eliminate the I, the one who is seeking, the ego, the I special, and eliminate desire. I want it. Once you say, the world cannot give me anything to make me happy. I'm already happy. If the world gives me something, fine. If it doesn't give me, I'm still fine. So then such a person becomes desireless. If things come, he's fine. If things come, he's don't come, he's still fine. So the moment you remove desire and the moment you remove ego, you are happy. So that is the secret of happiness. Remove the ego, remove the desire. So such a person whose ego is gone, who becomes one with that totality, he is called Jivan Mukta. He is realized while living. He is liberated while living. And the masters, again, I have not experienced that, but the masters who have experienced say this is so clear to these people. It is so clear, this knowledge. It is like a reflection in the mirror, like you're standing in front of a mirror. How clear your reflection is? If the mirror is clean and shiny and polished, you know, it's so clear. So for these great masters, this knowledge is that clear, like a reflection in the mirror, completely valid for them. There is no doubt in their mind, because that I am that reality. See, you and I say that I am Brahman, I am that reality, but they actually live it, they experience it, they know it. And in the further verses, they will talk about how such a person lives in the world. So this scripture is very clear, because it tells us about who is a realized master and how he lives and how we should live to reach that. Even the steps are given very, very clearly. It's a very beautiful Upanishad, very short but very powerful. Now, so this is called Jivan Mukti. That's the great masters or prophets. What is Krama Mukti, or called sequential? Now here we have the word Brahman, which is the substratum. Here we have Brahmaji, the creator. What happens is that this Brahman, the Lord Father in heaven, the consciousness, takes on three roles, three jobs. One is the creator, one is sustainer, and one is dissolver. You know, so one who gives birth, one who takes care of us, and then one who takes us away at the time of death. Brahman himself does not play that role, because that Brahman is formless, shapeless, has no role, has no nothing. It is just a support. But that Brahman takes on three roles, and one of them is Brahmaji, the creator. Then we have Vishnu, who sustains us. And then Shiva, who is the destroyer. That's why God is called G-O-D, generator, organizer, destroyer. So God stands for that, generator, organizer, destroyer. Yes. So that is meaning of God. So Brahmaji is the creator. So each of these three, Brahma, Vishnu and Mahesh, have different worlds, different lokas where they live. Supposedly, you know, as we know, this is not the only world. There are seven worlds above us, the heavens, and there are six hells below us. So earth is in the middle. There are six hells below us, and there are seven heavens above us. So there are 14 worlds altogether, seven plus eight, and then six below. And above them, of course, is the Brahman, the creator. So one of these worlds is Brahmaji's world, the world of the creator. So what happens to some individuals who do not realize, they have not completely realized, but there's still a little ignorance left, there is still a little confusion, but they are highly evolved souls, great saints and prophets, but they have the final step they have not taken yet. But they have gone beyond birth and death. Some of us, you know, if we have done good deeds, you know, you finish this life, you live in heaven for a few years and then you come back, and then you maybe in the next life, if you have been a good individual, you will be born in the house of wise saints or yogis or wise people, where you will continue your spiritual journey. But suppose you have evolved to such an extent that you are no longer born again, but you have still not become totally liberated. So you are just on the cusp, as to say, you have just needed to cross a little bit. So what happens to such people? They go to the world of Brahmaji, the creator, and they live in perfect harmony, perfect joy. But it's like living in heaven, but it is even beyond heaven. It is even higher than heaven, because heaven is a place where you go and then you are born again. But such individuals are not born again. They become one with the creator. They stay with the creator. And what happens there, they are taught by the creator himself. The creator Brahmaji teaches these people. So it is delayed. It's not instant. While here, it is immediate, right? In this life itself, I'm done with it. And I'm done with it. And that is the best. If you can achieve that, that is very good. But even if you can't achieve it, you go here and it's a wonderful world. You know, you're very happy and you are sitting with the creator and learning, because that final, you know, knowledge is missing. And then what happens is that at the time of dissolution, you know, all the scriptures talk about the dissolution, like the Bible talks about 40 days and nights of rain where the whole earth was ended. And even our Upanishads talk about dissolution where the whole world will end. Even science talks about that in a few billion years, what will happen is all these stars like the sun and all the stars, the stars, like the sun and all the other, you know, star, North Star and all, will lose their heat because they are burning carbon and hydrogen to create heat. That's why the sun is able to generate so much heat, which nourishes our planet and nourishes all the other planets, heats the planets. But after a while, the fuel in the sun will end in a few billion years. And so when that happens, the sun will become cold. Sun will no longer be hot because the fuel is burnt. And all the stars, sooner or later, the fuel will end. And so when they end, what they do, they become a black hole. When it becomes cold, it becomes a black hole and the planets will all be sucked into it. So if we are still alive in a few billion years, will be sucked into the sun. And that will happen to the whole universe. It will become a black hole. And that is the end of the universe. So when that happens, these people who have been taught by Brahmaji or the creator, they do not end. They become one. He gives them the final knowledge. And so that is called Krama Mukti or sequential. Where they go there, they learn. And then having learned from the great teacher himself, they then reach that final state of merger. Is that clear? Everybody, is that clear to everybody? So this realization, when they are in that state, it's not clear like a reflection in the mirror. It is like watching in a disturbed water. If you're standing in front of a lake and the water is clear, and this is one thing, but if the water is disturbed, how your reflection is broken? So that's how they are. They are in that state. It's not that clear to them. It is like a broken water. And with the right knowledge, they become one. So that's what he says. Brahma lokeshu paranta kale. At the time of death. Death means not the death of the body. The body dies and then the individual is born again. You know, the mind and intellect, the individual doesn't die. We know that. It goes there to heaven or hell, stays for a while, and then takes on a new body. So death is not death of the body, but death of the ego. And that can happen immediate, or it can happen gradually. So that's why the Brahma Lokeshu, when he says Brahma Loka, it can be mean either the world of Brahman or the world of Brahmaji. So both the meanings can be taken from this verse. So he's talked about both kinds of seekers, one who get it immediately and one who get it delayed. And then what happens to them? Paramritat parimuchyanti sarve. They go beyond immortality. Now, immortality, we always think as living in this body forever. You know, they say, oh, I want to be immortal. That means what? I want to live in this body forever. And that is the most miserable state. After you are 80 or 90, 95 or 100 And if you have to keep on living in this body and you become 100 and 110 and 120, it will be miserable. So I'm not. The point is that when you say immortal, it does not mean living in this body forever, but realizing I am immortal. What is immortal? I am that consciousness. I am immortal. So whether a child can also say I am immortal, an old person can also say I am immortal. That means living in this body, I understand I am immortal. That is called immortality. And then the body may drop at any time. Somebody may drop at, 50 years, some at 60 years, some at 90 years, some at 6 months. Bodies can drop at any age. But a person who has understood I am immortal then goes beyond birth and death. Then the body he can drop anytime, because then he has no attachment to this body. He says this body is like a clothes I have worn, or is like a car I am driving. If my car breaks, I go get a new car. So what? Nothing happened to me. So similarly, if this body drops and if I have not finished my journey, I go get a new body. So what? Person has no attachment to the body, just as I have no attachment to my car. I mean, some people have extreme attachment, but if the car becomes old and then you say, it's okay, it's time to junk it, take it to the junkyard or trade it in and buy a new car. So similarly, my body is now old, it's time to take it to the junkyard and buy me a new body. So that is called immortality. That is called, so it is not an intellectual concept. The person has to live it, has to experience it as I am that immortal. And such a person goes beyond the pairs of opposites. Because pairs of opposites affect the body, right? Heat and cold, health and ill health. It affects the mind, joy and sorrow. It affects the intellect, success and failure. So heat and cold, joy and sorrow, success and failure, health and ill health, enemy and friend. They're all related to me as this body, mind and intellect. But if I am that consciousness, then to whom is the heat and cold? To this body. To whom is health and ill health? To this body. It's not to me. To whom is joy and sorrow? Somebody, loves me, somebody doesn't love me. It's to the mind. It's not to me. To whom is success and failure? It is to this intellect of mine. But I am not the intellect. So such a person does not mean that he does not care or does not work in the world, but is not affected when the world insults him or when the world throws roses at him or throws stones at him. He remains unaffected. So that is the state of this realized master who, while living in this world, achieves the highest truth. That is the essence of this verse. So actually, if you look at this verse again, if we look at it, you apply this knowledge, you don't need anything more. You have the right knowledge, you have understood it fully, you have applied it in your life, you have detached from the world, you have held on to the higher, your mind is pure, there is no anger, greed, jealousy. And while living, your ego is gone, you become desireless, you become one with that. That's it. There is nothing more. So in two lines, we are all realized now. That's all. No, honestly, if you have understood, that's why for a wise person, one sentence is enough. But for most of us, because we have so much ignorance, so much vasanas, years of study, we are still there where we were, but it does not mean to be discouraging. But see, like for me, when I started studying in 1990, I didn't know anything. Even the Gita, Bhagavad Gita, was totally Greek to me. And now I'm able to understand a little bit, able to explain even these Upanishads. So slowly, slowly, the more you listen to these great Mahatmas, the saints who come here, the more you read, slowly becomes clearer. And then you also have to regularly meditate. You have to regularly meditate. So that's why the teacher says, Shraddha, Bhakti, Dhyana, Yoga, Tavaihi. So learn it in the earlier verse. He said, learn it by Shraddha, by faith in the teacher, bhakti, by love for God, and by meditation. So right knowledge, love for God, love for this knowledge, and meditation together will take you to the highest. So it is a step by stepwise. If it happens in this life, wonderful. If not, continue my journey. It's not meant to be discouraging. It's meant to be encouraging that we are all on the right path. The fact that you are listening to this, studying this itself shows that we are all on the right path. So it's wonderful. And thank you all. You know, because of you, I am able to read and understand this. So it helps me a lot.
Yes,
sir. Labored respiration, yeah.
And so, you know, what is happening now, that, you know, shutting down, what,
yes,
as far as, you know, like the ego and...
See, what is shutting down is the bodily functions. The bodily functions are shutting down. The eyes are becoming weaker, the hearing goes down. That's why as we get older, our vision goes down, the hearing goes down, our ability to walk, you know, so all the sense organs and organs of action become weaker. Our hands become weaker, our feet, our brain becomes, you know, less functional. But at the end stage, basically all her sense organs are shutting down and she's ready to go. You know, it's like when you are moving, say from Bakersfield, you are moving to Dallas. So what do? You pack your bags, right? So you pack all your things in the bags, and then you shut your house and, you know, you give away your house and you move. So same way, this mind and intellect, this individuality, is slowly packing its bags. So the bags of the body are being packed. My eyes are being packed, my ears, my, you know, hearing, my hands, my feet, my brain, everything is shutting down. And once the whole house is shut, the ego moves, the individuality moves. The ego only dies on realization. When you have realized, become one. If you have not realized, and if you have died, then that ego does not die, that mind and intellect does not die, that individual continues his journey. Depending on her good or bad karmas, she'll spend some time in heaven or hell, depending on how she has lived her life, and then will continue the journey, unless she's a realized master or a realized soul. So the best thing you can do is play some spiritual music next to her. So whatever she enjoyed listening to, you know, anything religious, maybe some psalms, you know, she lived some church music, some choir music, some religious music, because if they hear that, that's good. Because even if their hearing is minimal or you're not sure, but it's okay to play it, because you don't know, you know, how much this ego is still functioning. But the ego doesn't die, just the body perishes. And that's what's happening to her. Her body is shutting down. And then how many days she lasts, you know, we don't know. It will depend on her karmas and so on, whatever time is left. And that's why some people die at age 12. And people say, why did God have to take away this person at age 12? That individual was supposed to live only 12 years to fulfill its karmas. For that individual, that life was only meant to be 12 years, after which that individual's karmas for this life are over. And so this person left. It's not God took him, but for his life, for his vasanas, only 12 years was. And people say, oh, God is so cruel, he took away my child, or my, you know, my grandchild, or you know, such a young man, why did he have to die? You know, some men die in accidents and all. They say, oh, why did he take? For that individual, his life was only meant for that much time, and then he has to continue his journey. So such a person can handle death without fear. Once you have understood that, you say, okay, it's sad that the person died, but you don't cry excessively. You say, okay, it's time for him to go. And so he went. Does that answer your question?
Hearing is the last to go.
Huh?
Hearing is the last to go and first to be born. You know, when even the woman pregnant, 2 months,
the baby can hear.
Yeah, and the same, the hearing is the last. Even if the patient is unconscious and somebody can't hear you, even they don't know they are not here. But the hearing is the last thing to go.
So that's why they say you can play spiritual good yeah. music. Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, she can hear. I think she's cognizant of what you heard.
Yeah, so just play good music next to her. Get some CDs or some from the internet, download some good or psalms, or you can buy them from the church or, you know, choir music, anything that she used to love to hear. But it should be spiritual, not rock music.
She liked Spanish music.
Yeah. So Spanish, but religious music related to Christ and, you know, all that. If that's better. I mean, you can play for her entertainment also if she likes, you know, Spanish music. But intermittently play spiritual music also. That is better, I think. Because that then they takes their mind towards God. And they say the last thought that you have, if it's of God, then, you know, you go to the higher. So that's why you should play that kind of music. But yeah, if she truly loved, you know, entertaining music, you don't want to bore her at her time of death, maybe you can alternate. I don't know. I'm not an expert on that, on death and dying. But yeah, somehow, you know, play good music. There was a doctor here, Dr. Maitra, whom we all knew, and he was quite sick, and his wife, and I knew him because he was my patient, his wife also. So then she called me that he's very sick and he's dying and so on. So then I did take some Bhagavad Gita. I showed her on her phone how to download, and I told her, let him just keep on listening to that, because he was unconscious. Basically, he stayed in that state for about a week. So I told her as much as possible, because he was a Hindu, I said, play the Bhagavad Gita for him as much as you can so that he will have those sounds in his mind. That's what she did. So then he passed away in about a week. So I visited him at his house and met his wife.
Yeah. Sort of on this topic, I'm curious, like, once the ego leaves the body, does it realize, oh, darn it, I should have worked harder? Or do you have more of an awareness?
No, probably, yes. Probably, yeah.
And then you get born again, you're like, oh, well, then you forget again.
That's why the child cries when it's born again. Like, oh my God, I'm here again. No, but that's true. You know, that's what they realize, that I should have. And so hopefully, you know, but then what happens is that in the next life, you forget everything. See, God has put this curtain where you don't remember. A child doesn't remember his past life. You know, the soul might remember in the subtle worlds, but then once it takes another body, it promptly forgets everything, including ABCs, including what I have done, what I have not done. And so that's why each life is afresh. But that's why this knowledge, then you say, okay, I'm tired of this birth and death. I want to realize. And why do we have to hear again and again? Maybe when I have an opportunity, I'll talk about that.
So what? Lays dormant.
What's?
It lays dormant until finally there's a spark that you start remembering, you know something.
Well, the guru has to remind you that you are that. You need a guru, you need a teacher. It doesn't come on its own. That's why all these years, you know, I didn't know anything, you know, till I was, whatever, you know, 40 some plus years before I started going to the Chinmaya mission and studying. So, I mean, I knew some stories about, you know, Ramayana and all. I had listened to Swami Chinmayananda as a teenager, but I didn't remember much. But some few things here and there stay with you, you know, whatever the parents have taught, whatever. You have listened to talks and stuff, but it's until you start studying regularly on a daily basis, then only this knowledge becomes firm. You start studying and you start applying it, and then you start meditating on it. Until then, you know, most of us just have some vague idea of what is God and what is religion, and so we think we know it. We all used to think, though, I know, I don't need to study this. You know, that's why very few people come to these classes, because they think they know it. Yeah.
I know this must be very difficult to understand the idea of reincarnation, especially if we are new to the concept. And I don't want a full explanation, but this means like myself, my ego, my whoever I am, I am having another opportunity.
Yes.
This life that I'm living right now, belonged to me when I was in a previous life, and then it will continue when my body
right.
dies.
Right. Yeah. See, what happens is this body perishes, mm-hmm. right? And the body, we all have the same human body made of five elements: eyes, ears, nose. What distinguishes me from you is my emotions, my ideas, and my desires, my vasanas. So this mind, intellect, and vasanas, this packet is called jiva. It's called the individuality. And that is who you really are. You are not this body. You are this individual.
Personality
who is occupying this body. And you keep on thinking that I am this body. But when the body perishes, since the individual is still ignorant, still has the ego, that I am this body, it goes to heaven or hell, fulfills its karmas, and then takes another birth where this spiritual journey continues if he has this desire to know the truth. The journey only ends when he understands I am that infinite spirit and he becomes one with that. So until that happens, your journey will continue. And what is the proof of reincarnation that we had another body? People always ask, what is the proof? There are four or five explanations. I don't know if they're 100% proof. One is the compassion of the Almighty Lord. He's so loving and compassionate. Why would he give one person to be born in the house of Rockefeller or born in the house of Kennedy and live in comfort? Another person is born in some hut in Africa and his father and mother have AIDS. Or father is dead, mother is a prostitute and she has AIDS and then he's born with AIDS. What has the child done to have, or some children get leukemia at age 6 months, get cancer at 6 months. Or some people are born with defects, you know, they are Mongolism. So is that God so, you know, unfair that to one person he blesses and one person he curses? They say, why does God do it? We don't know. So most people don't have an explanation. They say God alone knows. But our scriptures say that God has nothing to do with it. The kind of body you get depends on your karmas, depends on your actions in your past life. If you have done good actions, you will be born in not necessarily in a rich house, but in a house where you will get this knowledge from childhood, in the house of yogis, in the house of wise people. Or you will be born in a comfortable house where you'll have a nice living and opportunity to study. But if you have done a lot of bad karmas, then you will be born in a house where you will be abused or you will be beaten or you'll have cancer or you have mental retardation. I mean, it's not to put these people down. It is to explain why there is a variety, why some people are born happy and some people are born suffering. And the idea is for us not to judge these people and say, oh, this guy is suffering because he was horrible. No, my job should be to help. If somebody's handicapped, somebody's sick, if I can help them, I should help. That is my job. That is how I evolve. I evolve not by judging people, but by helping people. But that explains. That's one reason. Okay? The second is that there are examples where people have actually remembered their previous birth. There was a lady in India. No, there was a young girl in India who was about 10 or 11 years old. And this came in the papers. And she was interviewed by the journalist. And she said, okay, my name is not this. I am so-and-so. And I lived in this particular village. And that was my name. And this is who I am. So they said, oh, she's talking nonsense. Take her to a psychiatrist. So no, this is not me. I am that lady. I was in that village. So they said, okay, somebody said, let's humor her. So they took her to that village and there were two young men and she started crying. She said, these are my sons. They were older than her. These men were older. And she said, these are my sons. And I was their mother. And she named that Gangaben or Gangavati or whatever. And they found that really there was a lady called Gangavati. And she said, this was my house. And there is the living room. And she outside the house, she said, you know, there is a living room here and a kitchen here. She could identify the whole house from inside. So she remembered that she was that Gangavati who had died a few years back. So they said, yeah, there was that late, this boy, young man's mother died about 20 years ago. And that was her name, Gangavati, and she lived in this house. And this young girl identified the entire house from outside. And she even said, these two boys, this is their name. She named them correctly. And they were older than her. She said, these are my sons. And she started crying. So these are the examples. The third reason to support the concept of rebirth is child prodigies. Like Mozart, at age 5, he could play the piano. Not only he could play the piano, he composed operas. He was a great composer. At age 5, they gave him a piano and he started composing. How could he have done that? He in 5 years, how could he learn how to compose? He had studied in his previous birth. Bobby Fischer was a chess grandmaster at age 10, and he was beating the world's best chess players. So there are many reasons that explain. And the scriptures all talk about it. Even Islam and Christianity talks about it. Christianity says, the kind of life a man gets is a result of his past deserts. It says that in one place, the Bible says, the kind of life a man gets depends on his past actions, past deserts. And even Muhammad, one place in the Quran, even though these scriptures don't acknowledge, he says, I was a stone, then I became a plant. From a plant, I became an animal. From animal, I have become a man. Now, why should I be afraid? Because from man, I can only go upward to become a saint. It is said that, but they don't show it. They don't. But it is mentioned in all the scriptures, even in the Bible, even in the Quran, and of course, in all the Hindu scriptures, there is a lot of evidence on that. I just gave you two or three reasons.
Perhaps this also responds to another question that I have in relation to, like, India. The place, you know, this beautiful knowledge, so much powerful, and still you have the question, how come that in their society there's so much division, there's so much injustices, so many poor people, sick people, how come that this knowledge doesn't apply? Or the people who have the knowledge, sometimes they belong to the minorities or the rich people, you know, and how come that this knowledge is not transferred, you know, in their society by...
Well, what happens is that the majority of the people don't... This is too complicated. This is too complex. They just want simple. Okay, there is God. Love him. Pray to him. And he will bless you. And be kind to your neighbor. You know, so most people understand religion at the very basic level. That I should be good. I should love my neighbor. I should pray to God. I should go to church once a week. Or go to temple, offer, you know, coconut or light a candle and so on.
Isn't there the ability to comprehend part of our karma, though, too?
Yes. Yes. Even the fact that you have the desire to know this knowledge is the result of your past karmas. So they are exposed to it, but most people don't want it. Same way, you know, most people, that's what somebody asked our guru, Swami Tejomayananda. He says, why do only 200 people come to your classes? He said, I'm surprised even 200 come. He said, because this knowledge is not for everybody. To tell, if I tell you, you are that, they say, what kind of nonsense is this guy talking, you know? How can I be that? You know, so it's not easy. Needs a lot of thinking, needs a lot of contemplation and a meditation. So it needs a lot of effort. Most people don't want to put the effort. They are so busy working morning to night. I don't have time. I have to work, earn a living, take care of my family. And so that's all. And then they're born and then they die, you know, because their whole life is just spent in acquiring, possessing, taking care of their family, working. And that's it. They don't have time or they don't have interest. Or like she said, they don't have the grace. They haven't done enough karmas. When you have done enough karmas and if you have a desire, the knowledge itself appears. A guru will come into your life. Once you have this desire, the guru will appear. You don't have to go looking for a guru. The guru appears. You just have to have the desire to know.
But, and no matter where you live.
Yes.
And no matter what language.
Like look at all of you, you know. Sorry. You're reading the Upanishads, which 99.9% of India have never even heard the word Upanishad. I did not hear it. I grew up in India. I lived in India for 26, 27 years. I never heard the word Upanishad. I didn't know that. Even though I was educated, I was a doctor. But I didn't know what Upanishad was. It's only later on that when we started studying it. So most people have no desire to know. And we are fortunate that we have this opportunity.
Layman can understand. So you need a teacher, you need, and nobody has time to, they just, you know, they have, of course, that's what...
Yeah, once a week you go and that's enough. And that most people don't even go once a week. So that's why in Sikh also, Guru is given a lot of importance in the Sikh faith. We say without Guru, you cannot learn. Just as, you know, to learn golf, you need a golf pro. You know, you cannot learn golf on your own. To learn science, you need to go to a science teacher, to a school. To learn driving, you need a teacher. You cannot learn driving on your own. They won't let you. To learn cooking, you have to learn from your mother or from, you know. So you need a teacher in everything, and so also in spirituality is even more important to have faith in the teacher. But you're right, in India the knowledge was there, but it was hidden, it was lost. And it was only people like Swami Chinmayananda and Vivekananda and such teachers who brought this knowledge forward. Because most people just have blind belief. They just believe in God, okay, there is God, that's fine, I'll see you once a week and that's it. And they don't... and then we don't change our actions. See, our actions don't change. It has to come, that's what he says. Yataya Shuddha Sattva. He puts the effort, purifies his mind, gets the right knowledge, applies that in his life. So there are four steps. You purify your mind, remove the negativities. Then you go to a teacher, you get the knowledge. And the knowledge becomes clear. So you put effort. And then you apply in your life. Then only the... So it's a lot of work. And most people don't have the interest. Well, I think evolution, because we are destroying the animals, no? So the animal egos are now becoming humans. And actually, and he has unlimited source of supply. God, Brahman, has unlimited. He can create a 10 billion more egos. So what? And this only this earth, there are so many, there might be so many other earths in this whole universe where there are people living, and they may be in different states of evolution. You know, some may be more advanced, some people may be apes, you know, some people may be very evolved. They have powerful weapons, you know, they may be able to travel through space and time and all. So this is not the only earth. So he has unlimited, you know.
So some of them are, some of them are completely new.
Yeah. I'm sure there are new planets coming out where they are just starting from the beginning, and there are others who are very evolved, and some, you know, who are in the like us. So there are many Earth-like planets throughout the world.
How do you explain, like, you know, so the ego that comes in that body, how is that chosen?
It's based on the vasanas. What you call genes, we call vasanas. What science called genes, we call vasanas. Vasanas is our coding. And based on my vasanas and based on my karmas, I choose a body. So this individual...
Does it come from parents?
No, it doesn't come from parents. The child chooses the parents. The parents do not give birth to the boy. The child chooses the parents. That's what we say. That the body that is growing, that is only a body. It doesn't have a mind, intellect, right? At birth, it's only flesh, cells multiplying. Then at 3 months, the ego enters the mother's womb, the mind, intellect. So the kind of body I choose is based A, on my karmas, and B, on my vasanas. So if I have done good karmas, then I will get a good body. If I have done evil karmas, I'll get a bad body. I'll get a maybe mentally challenged or somebody who is very sick, deformed. Secondly, based on my desires, now say you have this desire to learn about God, to study the scriptures. And say we study for next 20, 25 years, and then we have not yet realized, we have not become Jivan Muktas. So then, because this desire to know is so strong, then you will be born in a body where this knowledge will continue. But say if you were wanted to be rich, and you were very poor, and you wanted to be rich and rich, and you were thinking money, 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 your whole life, and you couldn't get money, and you were very miserable, and you were, I wish I was rich, then what will happen? You'll be born in a rich family the next time. You'll be very rich. because that was what he wanted, or somebody wanted to be a, you know, have a health, you know, like muscles, be like Arnold Schwarzenegger, or be, you know, be somebody, you know, like a bodybuilder, and he was a weakling, and he tried. So he said, I want to be. And he dies with that idea. He'll be born next life in a place where he will, you know, his parents will take him for bodybuilding. So whatever your strongest desires are in this birth, those desires will be fulfilled in your next birth if you couldn't get fulfilled. So the best is not to have desires. Only your desire should be to realize. Don't say, I wish I was this, or like some women say, I wish I was a man. It's so horrible being a woman, you know, having all this pregnancy and this and that and all this. And a lot of men, like at least I feel that women are more evolved. I always used to say, I wish I was a woman. No, I remember I used to tell you that my next life I want to be born as a woman, because women are more close to the truth. But now I have understood that why even have a desire to be born as a man or woman? I don't want to be born. You know, that is the best desire. So, or even if I am born, may I progress spiritually. It doesn't matter whether you have a woman's body or man's body, or even if you're born as a bird or an animal, how does it matter? As long as I am spiritually growing, that's all your desire should be. God, may I never forget you. May I never forget you. May I always grow towards you. That should be the only desire. Yes, you work and you do whatever, but do not have an overwhelming desire for something that you don't have. Because if you're born with that desire, that will become your vasana. That will become your tendency in the next life. So best is, oh God, may I know you, may I reach you, may I become one with you. If it doesn't happen in this life, doesn't matter. I should continue my journey. May I never forget you. There is a song, na? Main tumko bhool jaun, par tum mujhe mat bhool jana. There is a song, na? There is a song. Oh, even if I forget you, God, you please don't forget me. So the idea is that may I always remember you. O Nath kabhi tum mujhko na bhula dena, Bhagwan meri naiya. There is a very famous song, you know, a poem that you please take my boat across this ocean, and may I never, you know, even if I forget you, I get so busy, you please remember me and take care of me.